You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh man, I've been hard since you said hi. Welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Yes.
We've done really bad. We've done really bad so far this episode. We're talking about
this is like our best episode ever so far.
Really bad.
Matt, would you rather the Cardinals sign Kurt Schilling or Bud Norris for $3 million?
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Oh, he'll take Pete.
I love Kurt Schilling.
Well, yeah, see, there you go. I personally have a relationship with Kurt Schilling.
Ooh.
So, okay.
My bad.
That's my bad.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst of friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Mike and Matt. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Tired, but ready to do some second baseman, man. Excited.
Well, I'm glad you're ready to do them.
Yeah, all of them. Line them up.
Speaking of ready to do things, Mike Warner's on the show again. Mike, how you doing?
Oh my gosh, yes. Definitely speaking about how to do things. I just saw some video right before we started the show of Gregory Polanco just straight working out and getting it. And I tell you what, the body's looking good. He's looking good. And he's going to end up being...
You. I'm going to start finding you and making you pay us every time you say Gregory Polanco.
Gregory Polanco is a man amongst boys. He's going to end up being a top two-round player
good.
This year.
When he plays with boys, literally on the field, like that's the only time.
I didn't go there, and honestly, earmuffs right now for me on you, Matt, because I'm not even listening to you.
He's the most overrated. No, I'm not even. Different.
You shut your mouth. This is my introduction. This is my time. So just you had your time. This is mine. Gregory Polanco's the man. Mike Trout, I also saw some workout videos on him. There's 44 days till baseball season starts. Like, life couldn't get better.
I'm going to have to politely ask you to shut the fuck up.
Is it possible that Mike Trout is underrated?
Yes, probably. All
right. Well, we should
watch him do a workout video, and then you'll know why he's underrated.
Not according to Preston Wilson. He had him as number 3 on the center field list. Anyone else see that?
Oh, it was gross. I did not. That sounds terrible, though.
Yeah. Who was number 1? George Springer, and number 2 is Blackman.
Okay. Well, maybe he's been drinking too much of that George Springer bathwater.
nice. Way to bring it around. Full circle. I love it.
It only took 3 years for that joke to come around again. So, joining us today is a special guest. We have Paul Martin from Lenny Melnick Fantasy Sports. Paul, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm not really ready to do any players. I hope that's okay with you guys.
Not for Matt, apparently.
That's all right. More for me.
Although we are talking about second base, and I think Jose Ramirez plays second base, so we might get into some guys I want to do. I don't know.
Well, I'm glad you're fitting.
That's
right,
the drop
in
right
it.
There.
Yeah, exactly. That's going in the front. Paul, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, where you can be reached on social media, and then what you do over at Lenny Melnick Fantasy Sports.
Right. So on Lenny Melnick Fantasy Sports, I usually do one of his daily shows every week. If anyone doesn't know, he does a daily show for baseball every single day, all throughout the year, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. I usually take one of those shows per week. We do a live chat room and stuff. Gets really fun. I mean, Tim McLeod shows up pretty much every day now. There's a pretty good host of people in there. So that's fun. I also do the Real Fake Baseball with podcast. That's a podcast. It's on iTunes, all that stuff. It's with my co-host, Walter McMichael. And you can find me on Twitter at Paul the Martin. I always say the is my middle name. That's like my drop. So So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I just talk a lot of baseball. I'm trying to get more into, like, the writing and stuff lately. We're doing a lot of rankings and profiles and stuff like that. Of course, the obligatory sleeper articles and whatnot. So that's all dropping pretty soon over there. So, yeah, everyone check that out.
Definitely do that. Paul is newer into the industry, but a fantastic guy to get to know. And one of those guys, like, on Twitter that, like, you know, doesn't have enough followers. So definitely go out and follow him at Paul the Martin. You can follow Matt on Twitter at MDTopFWFB. Mike on Twitter at MikeWarnerFWFB. Me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. We are going to be talking some second base today. We're also going to talk about the Yu Darvish signing. But before we do, want to remind everybody.
And the Bud Norris signing.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're not going to get into that one. Need to remind everybody, if you like betting, I have the deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all his info for free. There is no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie and or XBet. With a $45 deposit, you will get a $50 rebate from Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit. And if I had used his info as opposed to trying my own bets today, I would have made money.
So, I think my strategy in this league is just not to bet, and I'll beat everybody.
Yeah, we have a staff betting league going on right now. We're going to do two rounds of this. The first one's going to be until the end of March. We all signed up and got our $50 bonus, and we're going to see who has the most money at the end of the month. We'll do a second round with MyBookie starting in April for the baseball season, and that one will open up to everybody. So if people are interested and want to jump in on that, go join our Facebook discussion group on Facebook. Just look for FWFB discussion group on Facebook, and I'll put more information on how you can get into our little betting pool, betting league that we're going to be doing on MyBookie starting with baseball season. I am not starting out well. Today was the first day. I think I went 2-4, so or 2-2, but including parlays, that doesn't help me. So, all right, let's talk about some MLB free agent signings. The big one, obviously, Yu Darvish signing with the Cubs, gets a 6-year deal, $150 million, I believe, something like that.
Negative.
Yeah, it was 126 with incentives, to go up to 150.
Yeah, $24 million in incentives. That's right. So there $126 million over 6 years. He has an opt out after 2 years. Matt, I know you're the most negative on this, so tell me what your thoughts are on the deal, and then Darvish in terms of fantasy.
Well, my thing with Darvish, and we kind of touched on this briefly pre-podcast, it doesn't really matter as much as it has in the past, but, I mean, we kind of went over this, but I bet a lot of people will be surprised that Darvish has only thrown 200 innings once in his career. That was in 2013, and then that followed up a 2014 season where he only threw 140 innings, and then obviously missed 2015 with Tommy John, and then came back in 2016 through about a 120. So, you know, obviously, it's worth noting, though, he'd bounced back last year with a 187. But he had an elbow injury, I believe, last year. Didn't he miss some time with some sort of concern? Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. But
I don't know that he did. He had
a flare-up,
didn't
he?
31 games. So,
So maybe I'm thinking of somebody else. That's my fault on that. But I guess the thing with Darvish is I'm always a little bit worried about the workload for Japanese pitchers, Asian pitchers in particular, because, I mean, they, if you're not familiar, they more subscribe to the throw kind of thing and build up your arm strength, whereas American pitchers or domestic pitchers are kind of babied on the babied is a good word for it, right? And, yes, in Japan, specifically, they do throw every 6 days. Here they throw every 5, obviously, so that's a little bit different. But you're talking, you know, pitch counts in the 140s and stuff aren't all that rare for, you know, a guy that as prolific as Darvish was in Japan. Obviously, everyone knows how he's been. He's a high strikeout, a little bit more walk guy than you would like. ERA and all the underlying numbers are trending in the wrong direction, but again, so is the whole league, I guess, in that aspect. I don't like the signing for the Cubs for the year 5 and 6. I don't think anybody does. But, I mean, if they go out and win a World Series like they did with the Lester deal or the Hayward deal, it doesn't really matter. Their window is now. They understand that. They took advantage of it, and I think they re-separated themselves from the Cardinals and Brewers. And from a fantasy standpoint, I was looking at the rankings today. Pre-signing, I had him like as my 20th starting pitcher, so I'm a little bit down on Darvish probably compared to some of you guys. I had him right behind Tanaka and Quintana. I might jump him over those two guys, but I don't think he's going to elevate past Martinez, Nola, Ray, Paxton, or Archer for me. So I think he's going to be in the 18 to 20 range.
Paul, what are your thoughts on Darvish signing and then just Darvish in general?
See, I thought it was a great signing. I'm not really concerned about the innings. I think he's missed that 1 year. But other than that, he's been pretty plus with innings, other than obviously the year where he was coming back from surgery. Last year, he bumped up from 120 to like over 200 with the playoffs. So, I mean, kind of explains why he was a little showing that fatigue in the playoffs last year. I just think the skills are so elite. And last year was a bad year and he regressed to elite levels. So, I mean, if he just gets back any of what he had pre-injury, I mean, the fastball velocity was up. He used the slider a lot more last year again. So he's obviously working that back into his repertoire. I wonder how much of a value it will be considering what Jake Arrieta signs for. I know I'm not the biggest fan of Arrieta, but I think letting him go if he goes for cheaper might be a mistake. But Darvish is a real value. He's like their third highest contract on that team. Obviously, Hayward and Lester look pretty bad right now, but I think they got a good deal with him. Absolutely.
I would rather have Arrieta if I got to pick.
Yeah, I mean, that's. Well, I mean, I think it depends on what he signs for.
Yeah, that's my question. Would you rather have Arrieta at the same price, or would you rather have Arrieta because there's going to be a discount?
I think I'd rather have Arrieta at the same price. It's close, but I think I would. That's just because I think, you know, Arrieta's got a lot. He's got that attitude where he's got something to prove, and I like that in my pitcher. I don't like pitchers that crap the bed in postseason games either, like Darvish. So,
Mike, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, for fantasy purposes, I think Darvish is going to end up being a top 10 starter. Paul mentioned his slider usage, and the Cubs love the slider. I think they're going to end up having him use that pitch probably close to 20% of the time. And he got almost 16% whiffs on that last year. I just think that he's going to end up continuing to throw innings, and when he does stay on the field, he ends up being a really quality pitcher. Yeah, there are some reasons to be a little bit pessimistic about this because the home run rate has went up the last couple of years, and there is some issues about his possible durability long-term, but that's with any pitcher in general. From a start-to-start basis, Yu Darvish presents as much upside as anybody in the league, really, and you get to pay a top 50 price for him as opposed to last year being a top 30 price. So I consider it a discount. Yes, there are some things as underlying metrics that you could maybe hang your hat on that are going to possibly turn into regression even more for this year, but in a vacuum, I think that he's going to end up being a top 10-ish starter this year. I would rather take, you know, Matt mentioned Chris Archer and Carlos Martinez, Robbie Ray. Like, I would take him above all of those guys, and I really wouldn't feel bad about it at all. So the Cubs wouldn't take him if they thought there were durability concerns right now. They certainly wouldn't spend that price on him, and I feel like I should have some faith in the actual MLB organization rather than, you know, other people thinking or diagnosing some type of injury. So I'm down for Yu Darvish.
Yeah, I'm going to split the difference between you guys. I think I would rather take him over Archer, but I don't know that I would take him. I definitely wouldn't take him over Robbie Ray, and I don't think I would take him over C-Mart. So, you know, I think he gets a little bit of a bad rap because he had some bad innings in the World Series. And ultimately, you know, and I've made this comment, you know, on a number of different podcasts and shows already, I don't think that they're going to be using the same ball he used in the World Series. It's not going to be rubbed down with Crisco. So he's not going to have a hard time getting a feel for his pitches. I think he'll be fine. Long term, this may look ugly, and I think Matt is right. I think year 4 and year 5, maybe year 6 of this deal could get ugly, especially if the elbow doesn't hold up. And we're getting, you know, we're still about 2 years away from, like, the end of the Tommy John window for him. So I think the end of this deal could be ugly, but like Matt said, if he wins him a World Series, who cares? In terms of fantasy, I think he's a top 15 starting pitcher. I'm going to rank him as such. He's going, I believe, just outside of that. And so I think he's a fairly decent deal right now. All right, let's talk about some second baseman, because we're not going to talk about Bud Norris. No one cares.
Fine.
Is he actually going to start, though? Can we just can you answer that question,
he's
Matt?
He's going to be like a middle reliever. No,
he's going to be a swingman kind of guy, which they need, but not for $3 million and not a racist one.
What? Good, valid point. Valid point.
Yeah. Racism definitely knocks you down a peg or two.
Yes. We've done really bad. We've done really bad so far this episode. We're talking about like.
What are you talking about? This is like our best episode ever so far.
Really bad.
Matt, would you rather the Cardinals sign Kurt Schilling or Bud Norris for $3 million?
Oh, he'll take peak.
I love Kurt Schilling.
Well,
yeah, see, there you go.
I personally have a relationship with Kurt Schilling.
Ooh.
So,
okay. My bad.
That's my bad.
As far as the Cardinals thing, I don't know why they didn't just sign Trevor Cahill for that price instead of Bud Norris. He fills the same role and he's better. So,
true.
All right, well, that's enough Bud Norris talk for this episode. let's move into our second base preview. Matched up some names once again, and you can kind of tell me which one you would prefer, either at their ADP or just in general. We'll start with Jose Ramirez versus D. Gordon. Paul, I'll start with you. Who would you rather have?
I think it's pretty clear here. We got to go with Jose Ramirez. I mean, the hit tool is ridiculous. The power just showed up last year out of nowhere, but seems sustainable. I mean, he's just a great hitter. The thing that people don't understand is, like, I mean, obviously the doubles and stuff were talked about last year, but this dude slugs like crazy. And if he could even, you know, just keep stealing bases, but at this point, I don't even know if that matters. I just think he's just an amazing player. D. Gordon, sure, if you really want to get the steals, go for it. But I don't know. I'd rather just kind of take Billy Hamilton a few rounds later, I suppose, and just get that solid player in Jose Ramirez. Their ADPs aren't even that different at this point, I feel.
Matt, what are your thoughts?
I want to take Jose Ramirez, and it's not close, but that's not a slight against D. Gordon. I just think Jose Ramirez is that good.
Yeah.
I like the offensive gains he's made. I do think he takes a little bit of step back in the power. I don't really fully trust it. Probably bounces back to the low 20s home run total, which is perfectly fine. I mean, it's basically your choice between a 5-category guy and a 3-category guy. So you have to go with the 5 guy. And this kind of wraps up my, like, goes back to what we're talking about with D. Gordon. D. Gordon gets a lot of people view him as a 1-category guy, which is completely incorrect. Mm-hmm. He's obviously batting average. He's going to be dependent, but he could still pretty much write in the stone that he's going to hit 275, in my opinion, just because of the speed. And run scored. Everyone forgets to run scored. That's a huge category, and it's kind of like the whip for pitching categories. No one really pays attention to it. And he's going to be among the league leaders in that category and betting with a nice couple of guys around him in that Seattle order. Obviously playing outfield, so after the first couple of weeks, you're going to have dual eligibility, which Ramirez also has a second and third. But you'll get that second in outfield, which is still valuable in itself as well. So not a slight against D. Gordon, but I'll take Jose Ramirez.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
There's no doubt that Jose Ramirez is the better overall fantasy asset. I completely agree with that. And, I mean, gone are the days of being able to get Jose Ramirez. What was it last year? He was going as, like, a top 100 pick or top 75 pick. I can't remember off the top of my head. It was, yeah, about top 100. But, I still love D. Gordon, where he's going. I have no problem taking him where he is currently going. What, top 30 pick right now is about where D. Gordon is sliding. Yes, in OBP formats, he takes a little bit of a dive, but you just can't. I love paying for steals, and I don't mind doing that. My goal is to get Billy Hamilton and D. Gordon on every team, and that's just so I can own the stolen base market. I can also grab other guys as well, but I have no problem paying. If you're asking me who I would rather buy at their current cost, it's D. Gordon. It's not really a debate in terms of Ramirez versus Gordon itself, because I do think Ramirez is the better overall player category. But his power is going to trend down this year. I don't think there's any question about that. I would project him in the 16 range as opposed to 29 that he hit last year. But again, I think D. Gordon is so valuable where he's currently going that you have to pick him if you're choosing between the two based on draft costs.
Yeah, I'm with Mike here, though. I mean, again, it's not a slight on Jose Ramirez. Love Jose Ramirez. Love him where he's going. I actually think he's undervalued as well. But I think D. Gordon is so undervalued. I mean, the fact that you get all those stolen bases with, you know, a 280 to 300 average, I think is just insanely valuable. It really allows you to, you know, take a guy that has extreme power numbers in the first round, wrap around and grab, you know, D. Gordon in the second. You know, I'm not a big Stanton guy, but I would love to get, you know, pair up Stanton with D. Gordon, or even Judge with D. Gordon, because you get all the runs and the average to offset any, you know, issues you might have with those with the power guys, and then you get all the stolen bases. It's amazing, you know. It's and I don't understand why he's going so low. To me, D. Gordon should be a top 20 pick, and he's going just about pick 30. If you look at just the, you know, through the month of February, his ADP on in the NFBC is 28.5. Love Jose Ramirez, you know, but I agree with Mike. The power is going to trend down. I don't think there's any way he hits 29 home runs again. I'm probably a little bit higher on his power than maybe Mike is. I think he's, you know, 20 to 25 with, you know, 17 to 20 stolen bases. It's a great profile, and I love Ramirez because you get to build a balanced team with him. You're not having to worry about having to make up power like you do with Gordon, but the discount for me is the reason I would go with Gordon. All right, let's move on and talk about two other guys. They're a little bit closer in ADP, and that's Jonathan Scope and Daniel Murphy. Mike, why don't you lead this one off?
Yeah, I love both of them, to be honest. So to pick between the two is kind of tough. I think Scope is what we see. He's not going to be an on-base percentage type of guy, but in regular batting average formats, I think that he's solid. He's not necessarily going to repeat the 30 home runs, although he could. I think 25 is a really good baseline for him. 260, 270 batting average is probably more apt. I think the 293 from last year is probably a bit ahead of what he should have finished. Baseball HQ's expected batting average metric had him at about 270. And, you know, based on his BABIP, he does do pretty well there. But he has a pretty big ground ball profile as well for a power hitter. He just has really relied on a nice home run to fly ball rate the last few years of his career. And really, you can't project outside of that because he's done it consistently over the last couple of years. So I'm safe in saying that Scope is a 25 home run guy. I don't love the 63 overall on ADP according to NFBC, but I still love the guy overall. But I love Murphy too. I know he got injured a little bit last year, but the 25 home runs that he hit in 2016 were completely repeatable in 2017. He's plate skills wise one of the best hitters in baseball, in my opinion. He even upped his walk rate last year in 2017. Great contact skills, great bat to ball skills. 340 plus BABIP the last couple of years shows that batting average is going to remain one of the highest in baseball. 322. 347 are his last 2 years batting average combined. I mean, I think that this is once again going to be another 25 home run guy as well. So maybe I am, as I'm talking it out, lean Daniel Murphy a bit, just because I think batting average wise he is going to lean higher than Scope, and I also think he's going to lean higher in on base percentage leagues as well. I think if you are going to choose Scope, you're probably just hoping for a few more home runs than Murphy. But really, if I'm projecting, I think that Murphy and him will probably finish close in home runs overall. So I'll definitely lean Murphy, but I like them both.
Paul, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm definitely leaning Murphy here, too. I think just the consistency alone is going to get me to buy into him a lot more than Scope. I get it with Scope. I mean, he's a huge dude. He plays second base. You know, that's great. And he hits home runs. But I just don't see the average continuing with him. I think you're looking at maybe like a 270 average with 30 home runs, which is good. But I just think that the average with Daniel Murphy, it seems to be sustainable over 300 every year. And, you know, when he's hitting 20 to 25 home runs, that's just a lot more useful than what Scope can give you.
Matt, what are your thoughts?
I'm going to be a little bit different than probably everyone else here. They're close, but, you know, Murphy's got that knee injury, might not be ready for the start of spring training, which I don't weigh too much into that. But Murphy's been kind of getting nicked up the last couple of seasons now. He had a hip injury, and I think he had a glute injury a couple of years back, like 2 years ago, and he had a big hip injury last year that kind of slowed him down in the second half. I'm leaning, it's close, but I'm going to go Scope a little bit here just because, yeah, I think the batting average is coming down. I think the power is real. And I think the power is real for Scope, and he's in a good lineup, good ballpark. So I'm going to go Scope over Murphy. They're both top 50 players for me, top 50 to 60 players, but I'll give the edge to Scope. And he's got the ADP for Scopes a little bit more favorable as well, so I'll take the shot there.
All right, I'm going to go with Daniel Murphy. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, if we hear there's a setback with his knee or thing or something like that, then obviously I'll revert over to Scope. And I've loved Scope. I've been a big proponent of him for quite a while. My only issue with him is the batting average, and I just don't think the 293 is repeatable. And I think one of the things you see with a guy like him is the same kind of thing we saw with Rougned Odor, is there's going to be variance year to year on the average, and that can be really, really dangerous if you're trying to predict what kind of average he's going to have. I mean, the last 3 years with let's do the last 4 years with Jonathan Scope, 293, 267, 279, 209. There's a pretty low floor that we're not talking about. And because he doesn't walk, he doesn't get on base very much, definitely takes a hit in the on-base percentage of leagues, that to me really kind of puts the floor a little bit too low. Whereas Daniel Murphy, as long as he's healthy, and that's obviously a caveat, I mean, you know he's going to hit 300. He's going to have a strong on-base. He's hitting in one of the best lineups in baseball. We have no idea what that lineup in Baltimore is going to look like halfway through the season. They may sell Scope. They may sell everybody but Scope. Who knows? You know, I mean, the Orioles aren't going anywhere. There's no reason for them to hold on to the guys even coming into the season. It seems like they're going to, but halfway through the season, it's the last season with Manny Machado on the roster. They could just sell anything that's not nailed down, and that could become really ugly if Scope's left on the roster with just Mark Trumbo and Chris Davis's unmovable contracts. So
you're not concerned with the health issues with Murphy, and comparable to Scope. Scope has missed a whopping total of 2 games the last 2 years. Does that not factor in?
I mean, it does. If I knew that Daniel Murphy was 100% healthy coming into the season, this wouldn't be a question.
Right.
But the fact that it's even a question, we're having this debate, is because there's a risk that Daniel Murphy, you know, could miss a little bit of time. You know, so far, it appears he's going to be okay. He's on schedule. He seems to be progressing well. Even if he misses some spring training time, you and I talked about this last week. I don't worry about hitters as long as they get at least a week, you know, of spring training at bats before the start of the season. They're not like pitchers. They don't need to, you know, ramp up that much.
This is true.
All right, let's move on and talk about the next pairing of guys I've got. Speaking of Rougned Odor is in this one, versus Javier Baez, both going around the same spot again. Paul, what are your thoughts?
Well, this one's pretty easy for me, too. I really love Odor. I mean, he's going later. I mean, it's a few picks, but he's still going later than Baez. And I just think you're just hoping Baez can become Odor one day. Obviously, the average is very, very iffy for both of these guys. The power, the speed upside is there for both of them. I just think that Baez is still like holding on to this shine that he had as a prospect, the huge power and speed upside, but it's just never come to fruition in the league. And Rougned Odor has shown it. I mean, he's hit 63 home runs over the past 2 years. He's stolen 29 bases. And sure, the average was 204 last year, but it was 271 the year before, and the BABIP was under 300. So, I mean, this is a guy who's obviously going to be volatile, but the upside is just so clear. He's 24 years old, just turned 24 years old 9 days ago. And, yeah, I'm totally buying back into Odor this year.
Matt, what are your thoughts?
I see, the thing with me is I'm in on Odor a little bit, but I'm going to go Baez just because I think Baez is, it's hard to say this about anybody with Baez, but I think Baez is slightly more established. And yeah, they both have contact issues. But when Baez does make contact, it's better than what Odor gets himself out a lot. Now, not with just strikeouts, but with also a lot of weak contact. And so I'm gonna go Baez, but it's hard with any Cubs player. We're going to get to this, especially here. We talk about the next grouping of players, but it's really hard with a lot of the Cubs players because there's so many mouths to feed in in that lineup on that roster and stuff for at-bats. But, yeah, Odor has hit 30 home runs the last two seasons. And, yeah, he stole four. I think the thing with Baez is I don't think we've seen the best from him yet.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are Matt needs a new microphone, A. B, first off, Javier Baez, as much as I loved him as a minor leaguer, has not been a great fantasy contributor to this point. And his plate skills have not gotten better. Like 69% contact in 2017. And you want to take him over Rougned Odor? Are you fucking kidding me? Like, there's no way. Like, Odor, I wrote up Odor on the Fangraphs player cap. So I've dove in to Rougned Odor. In a big way. So get this. The guy had a 224 BABIP. It was dead last among all qualified hitters. His career mark is 273. So even if you think that he's going to regress positively in BABIP in a decent way, it's going to end up being 30 points to get to his career average. That's not even saying if he has like a blip on the radar and ends up getting like 90 points better or something. Like, who knows? But batting average, I'm not worried about for this year. He's definitely going to hit better than 204. Mark that down. But this is a 30
bold
this is a
prediction.
I know this is a 30-15 guy. He has 21 stolen base attempts in each of the last 2 years. His speed score has remained exactly the same the last 2 years. They're going to continue to give him the green light a bit. He's also going to get hit way higher in the lineup than Baez is right now. Baez is probably projected to hit eighth or ninth in that lineup. He also is going to get platooned a ton because the Cubs are smart and they're not going to play him against righties because he has a 69% contact rate overall. I mean, Odor is a proven 30-15 commodity that's definitely going to get better in batting average. I'd say he's going to end up finishing 250, 260 in overall batting average this year. The lone bad mark on Odor is the fact that he cannot take a walk, and he has consistent infield fly ball issues throughout the minors and also a couple of years in the major leagues. If that doesn't change, then yes, that might, you know, hinder his overall bottom line a ton. But at the end of the day, like, this is a guy that's going 70 picks less than he was going last year, and he has the same upside that he had going into last year. I don't think this is close. I mean, honestly, I think Baez going even around Odor is a slap in the face to him. And I think that it's kind of disrespectful, Matt, that you're even choosing a Cub over Odor, who's a proven fantasy stud. Like, you should be ashamed of yourself.
Highlight of the show right there.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, that's definitely going in the front of the show. But
like, don't fuck with me on Gregory Polanco or Rougned Odor. Don't talk to me about either of them.
Apparently.
Like, they're on every team.
I miss having Mike on the show every week. I'm with you, Mike. I mean, to me, this shouldn't even be a question. I mean, aside from the fact that I tend to devalue batting average anyways because I end up putting it in the majority of formats that aren't like draft and hold, I just, like, you know, Madden's going to fuck with the lineup all the time, right? It's going to frustrate the hell out of you. I mean, I think last year we saw 508 plate appearances. Like, that to me feels like, oh, that's the high. Like, it's not going to get better from there. I like Baez. I like what he can do, but to me the upside lies in what we saw with Rougned Odor. I mean, a legitimate 30-20 threat. Yes, the batting average is going to be very, very hard to predict, but again, that's why I end up devaluing batting average anyways. Or punting it altogether, because who knows? I mean, he's in the last two seasons, he's had like almost a 70-point swing in batting average. So why even try? Let's move on to, speaking of batting average asset versus a batting average deficiency. We have DJ LeMahieu versus Yoan Moncada. Mike, who would you take?
Is DJ LeMahieu like Matt Duffy in Colorado? I feel like that's what DJ LeMahieu is. Like, he just hits everything on the ground. How do you hit 8 home runs, but you play for the Rockies? It's impossible. I feel like the three of us combined would hit more home runs than DJ LeMahieu, and that shouldn't happen. But, I mean, I'm definitely going to go Moncada because of the upside, and that's basically the only reason. I think LeMahieu is a safe batting average guy that's obviously going to tally a ton of runs scored, which is underrated in fantasy. People don't usually look for guys that specifically do well and run score, because it's not something we think about. And also it's a highly, you know, volatile category year in and year out, just like batting average as well. But LeMahieu's really just an unheralded guy that does the same thing each year. Not really a lot of upside there. But Moncada, on the other hand, if he can get his contact issues in check a bit, has the ability to go 20-25 this year, maybe 25-30, something like that. And in September of 2017, he ended up hitting 5 home runs, 2 stolen bases, hit about 270 and about 95 at-bats. That's a really strong thing. If you're going to look positively at his exposure last year, that's something really strong to look at. Moncada will be in a very much worse lineup in Chicago, obviously. They're obviously rebuilding. Abreu probably will get traded at some point. So that's obviously going to hinder his value a bit. But I'm going to go Moncada just based on the overall raw upside, because I've always loved Moncada. He's always been one of my number one guys in the minor leagues. And I think that this is going to be a growing year for him, but I'd rather check and see what happens at the same cost than go with somebody like LeMahieu, who I know I'm going to get.
Paul, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think this is the first one where it's really like dependent on team build. DJ LeMahieu, like if you're going for upside, like if you take Aaron Judge in the second round or something, you take Giancarlo Stanton in the first round or Trey Turner or something, you might want to take a guy like DJ LeMahieu over Moncada, just because you know what you're going to get out of the average. You know, like, he's not going to hit home runs, but he's going to do something at least for you. He's just a better real life player than fantasy player. Moncada can obviously have very gouty fantasy stats, and obviously that's what you're talking about with the upside there. And if that's what your team needs, you're gonna want Moncada over LeMahieu. It's hard to pick one over the other just because of that. I would just go Moncada because I'm more of an upside player when it comes to fantasy. So I just have more confidence in myself that if Moncada isn't necessarily what I think he is, I can try to find something off the wire and maybe supplement him until he is improving. Because I think at some point in the season, he's going to have a run where everyone is going to want him in their lineup starting. And he's just going to look like what we want to see out of him. I'm just not sure if it's going to be there for the whole year for him this year.
Matt, you're a prospect guy. You're going with Moncada, right? All right. We appear to have lost Matt Thompson. Everybody pour out their beers and say one for, or, you know, say a prayer for their homie, because Matt appears to be gone. So I'm gonna shock you guys a little bit, and I'm gonna take DJ LeMahieu.
Gross.
Thank God.
It's difficult because I'm usually, like I said, I'm usually the punt batting average guy. But, man, that average is just so stable and so nice. And really what it comes down to for me is he's hitting in the better lineup. He's going to score more runs. You know, Moncada gets Jose Abreu and nothing else. That White Sox lineup is absolutely atrocious.
Nicky Delmonico? What? Come on, bro. Don't be talking crap about him. Wellington Castillo?
Tim Anderson?
Yeah, man. Lurie Garcia is really, really angry at our podcast right now.
Yomar Sanchez, that's my boy.
Exactly.
Adam Engel?
Give me the Colorado hitter who's going to hit at the top of their lineup every time. Let's see. Matt, you back?
Yeah, man. Can you hear me?
Yeah, woo-hoo! There you go. All right, yeah, Matt. Give me your thoughts. Who would you rather have out of these two?
My scorching hot takes burned down the internet.
I thought you were upset about the Odor thing. I was like, God, I really didn't mean to hurt his feelings. I'm sorry.
No, man. If I cared what you thought, man, I'd be no. I never care.
We would have fired Mike from this podcast a long time ago.
Right. You know why you like Odor so much? Because you stink. There's my joke. The thing with maybe I shouldn't have came back on. I don't know.
But, yeah, Matt, stay off the show.
I've got too many drops for the front.
But the thing with Moncada, though, I don't like LeMahieu. One dimensional guy for me in the standpoint of. Yeah, he's going to score a little bit of runs in Colorado, but there's a lot of options to hit second in that lineup. Moncada's in a bad lineup, going to hit near the top because that's where his future projections are going to be. He's got 25-25 upside. He's not going to get there this year, but that's within the realm of possibility for the next 2 or 3 years, definitely. And the power-speed combination, where you're getting him late enough in the draft, you can shoot for upside and where it won't kill you. So it's Moncada all day. And I think people are sleeping on Moncada this year. I keep watching him go outside the top 100 picks, and I think that's crazy.
All right. I wish I hadn't let you back into the podcast. So let's move on and talk about two guys I really like. One I like a lot more than the other. Matt, I'll let you start, so that way, in case you drop again, we still get your take on Ozzie Albies versus Ian Happ.
See, this is the thing I was talking about earlier. If I was obviously I'm taking Albies either way, because I think Albies can do realistically something like 15-30 this year with a solid average. But I'm going to focus more on Ian Happ, though. If someone told me that they knew Ian Happ was going to get 500 at-bats this year, I think I'd take Ian Happ. I just don't see that being a thing with Schwarber, Baez, and obviously Russell's going to play short, push Baez over. They still got Ben Zobrist around. Jason Hayward, Almora, all those guys need at-bats. So I think Happ's going to be the one who loses out. And Happ, out of all those guys, only a couple of them have minor league options remaining, too. So Happ will be the odd guy out in a lot of that situation, too. I love Ian Happ going forward. He's not all that dissimilar from Moncada as far as the home run and speed combination. It's going to be a little different how he gets there. I think Happ's more power-based, but they're both going to be good, strong OBP assets. So bump up Happ in an OBP format if you believe in the playing time. But I really think Happ can go 25-15 himself. I just don't think he's going to get the playing time for it. So I'm going to go Albies, because Albies should hit number two in front of Freeman, and that's a pretty nice spot to be.
Paul, what are your thoughts?
Dude, this is a tough one. I love both of these guys. The thing I love about Ian Happ is that he showed the power, and that really was surprising because he was more of like an average guy in the minor leagues is what I thought, at least. But 2017 was huge for him, so I'm not sure if I really know what he's going to give us. But like Matt said, I mean, if he gets 500 plate appearances, then you kind of have to take him. But it's not a guarantee with that organization at this point. And I think you mentioned it earlier with Madden. I mean, you know, he always messes with the lineup, so I have no idea what you're going to get from him. But as far as Albies goes, it seems like he's going to play all year. I mean, we know he has great defense. He brings offense to the table. Like, I mean, the small sample that he had in the bigs last year was crazy. I mean, he was a two war player in 57 games. Like, this is not normal. Like, he had power, speed, he showed the average, he showed hard hit, like he showed everything that you want to see. And he was 20 years old in the majors. So that's just so serious. Let me make a decision here. I'll take Albies just because I think the playing time is just more guaranteed with him. I think the speed is obviously a bigger asset, and that's more coveted in fantasy nowadays. And the upside, just the total package, you know, I could totally see Albies hitting 20 home runs in a year. I think I might be the high guy on that. But I mean, just the way that he hits the ball, his whole approach, and he's just a very skilled base runner. I think I'm going to take Albies. The 15-30 upside is definitely there this season.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
God, I even mentioning Albies pisses me off, because like before the offseason even started, I was like, Albies has been great. And I'm just hoping that nobody really says anything about him the whole offseason so that I can go and get him in drafts next year, like past pick 150, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, you know, Sarah starts popping off the mouth over there at Fangraphs. And now everybody and their mom is all aboard Albies. And I'm sitting here just, you know, watching everybody take him in the top eight. Now he's, look, if you compare the two players, Ian Happ and Ozzie Albies in drafts, yes, overall Happ is going a little bit ahead, like 138 to 142, but the minimum pick for Albies is in the top 85, and for Happ it's 102. And I think that is agreeable. I agree with that. Happ, I agree with all you guys' concerns about this. Like, playing time is a possible concern. Contact rate was a 35% strikeout rate overall last year. You know, if you go against lefties, he actually did a little bit better. But overall, Happ, I've always loved him as a prospect. I like the fact that he's going to be kind of second base slash outfield eligible. He still has a long way to go, though. 25% home run to fly ball rate would end up being in the top 16 among all hitters in baseball if that was qualified last year. So obviously you can't expect a repeat in that, but his power metrics are stable, and he is a 25 to 30 home run bat. Now 400 at bats, 400 plate appearances, whatever, that's not necessarily in the cards for him. That's why I kind of don't want to draft him where he is, but agree on Albies on all fronts. Impressive debut last year. Plate skills are borderline elite at this point. Hard contact is stable. I think he has enough power to hit 15 to 20 home runs. Obviously, the speed is something that he can get upwards of 25 to even 35 stolen bases if things played right. Batting average is going to be straight. Like, I love everything about Albies. The one thing that pisses me off is that Eno Saris opened that big fat mouth of his, and now he's going to end up going in the top 100.
I'm really glad Eno doesn't listen to this podcast, but
I love Eno Saris. For just to be fair, I love Eno Saris. I just...
Not that it matters. He's no longer my boss over at FanGraphs. So.
True. Congrats, Justin, to the promotion.
Yeah, exactly, right? I'm with you guys. I think if I knew that Hap was going to be getting 600 plate appearances, I'd be all in on this. And I would have a really hard time making a decision between these two. I still like Hap, especially in a daily moves league where I can move him in and out on days where he's not playing. But in weekly leagues especially, or like NFBC where you only get to move guys in and out twice a week, it's really hard because he may miss two games out of the four that, you know, in that small stretch, and that can be a killer for your team. Albies is going to play every day, fantastic defensively, especially, you know, considering he's a shortstop playing second base. The power speed combo is amazing. I love the contact skills, and I love that in his major league stint, he struck out less than 15% of the time. That to me,
impressive.
While still,
and he's super young. He's one of the youngest major leaguers out there. He's 20 years old.
He was the young. I believe he was the youngest up last year.
He was. Yep.
I'm all aboard the Ozzie Albies bandwagon, and I'll be leading that charge with a bunch of other people. It's not just me. So
I have a question for you guys really quickly. I'm interested. This is a guy I'm not really campaigning for Chris Taylor, but I ended up with him a lot in my leagues. Out of the last four second basemen we talked about, where does Taylor kind of fit? Not to go off a tangent, but he's a guy that I seem to be ending up with a lot. And I like a lot of everything he did. You know, I just
have a hard time buying in, and he's a guy that I was going to put on the show notes for the Wednesday show, kind of break him down. And I'm sure the Thursday show will, the Thursday show, I was going to put him on the notes for there. I'm sure the Friday show will break him down as well.
Check it out. Yeah.
I have a hard time buying in on what we saw from Chris Taylor, because prior to this season, and I know he made swing changes and approach changes, part of the season, he was like a defense-only guy. Like, you know, he was like, oh, you know, maybe an empty batting average kind of asset. So it's really hard for me to believe that the 21 home runs is sustainable. I believe the stolen bases. I even believe the contact and the average. But I think he's like a 13-homer guy with, like, you know, 15 to 20 steals, which has value. But I'm not going to pay for that where he's going.
Yeah, the Dodgers run their team a lot like the Cubs. They like to use platoon switches. And also, Taylor hasn't been the healthiest guy in the world either. I agree with everything you said, Justin. Like, 12, 13, 14 home runs, 15 to 20 stolen bases. I think the average does go down to something in the vicinity of like 270, 260, which isn't crazy low or anything like that. But there's no way he ends up repeating what he did last. And a top 100 pick is really rich for him. So
yeah, I just find myself in a lot of these mock drafts I've done, I kind of just always end up with him. And it's weird. But
Paul, any thoughts on Chris Taylor?
Yeah, I have him in a league too. I mean, I don't really buy into it either, but like you said, there was swing changes and he is defensively really good. So he's going to be out there playing, whether it's 20 home runs or 15. I mean, I think the stolen bases are legit, so he's going to help you out. I mean, where you're buying him, it might look like an overpay, but I don't think it is. Like, it's kind of tough to find guys right now that are like 15, 20 upside with good average, because I think the average is going to stick, but is the power going to stick? That's the only problem. So yeah, I mean, 15 to, you know, 15 and 15 with a 280 average is not that bad in like the 10th round, ninth round.
And I think it depends too on your league format, because like in Yahoo, he's eligible everywhere.
Yeah, he really is.
So
yeah.
I mean, like, if you know, in your traditional league, he's going to be eligible at second base and outfield. But in Yahoo, he's going to add in shortstop eligibility. What is Yahoo 10 games?
I believe so.
Okay,
so
Yahoo 10 games for an entire adult life. You qualify.
Yeah.
he's eligible at catcher and pitcher.
He's Ohtani.
What did he play in Little League?
The other thing about Taylor too, though, is like the Dodgers have a lot of outfield depth, and I know Trace Thompson hasn't been a thing for a while, but he's projected to be on their opening day bench. Kiki Hernandez could play center field if they need him to. So could Jock Peterson. They also have Andrew Toles coming back. Like, so if something were to happen. Yeah, I mean, if something happened to Taylor midseason, and he was out for a couple weeks, they would take their time. And if that one of those players broke out, then just like last year with Adrian Gonzalez and Cody Bellinger, I mean, not exactly the same since that's a specific scenario where a veteran kind of loses his job essentially, but in the same vein, like that could happen.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the next set. These are two guys that are interesting. One, because their ADPs are right next to each other, but also because they play on the same team. So Scooter Jeanette versus Jose Peraza, Mike.
Why did you come to me first? You know who I don't understand.
You know who Mike picks on this? Come on.
Yeah. All right. So everybody who knows me, I have an irrational love for Jose Peraza, and I can't really explain to you why. I just
tried
can't.
To like, tried to take him in TGDI, and I have no part of it.
Yeah, I think you had us take Tyler O'Neill instead. I mean, Tyler O'Neill is your
you
favorite
mean
player.
In RDR, so right?
RDR.
Yeah, somehow. I know what you were meaning.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know what I'm really kind of banking on with Peraza. I mean, he's not the best-looking guy. His stats aren't the best-looking. Like, there's really – there's not a lot here. But, no, Peraza is going over 100 picks later than he was last year. And even you, Justin, you kind of talked me off the ledge a bit because I was so upset with him at the beginning of the year that I really didn't look at his stats much. But when you looked at the bottom line, he ended up stealing 20 bases. He was a 260-ish batting average guy. Yes, the run and RBI numbers were absolutely atrocious. But at the end of the day, like, what did you really pay for last year for some stolen bases? And he didn't disappoint there. Going into this year, I think you're going to see more of the same. He's definitely going to regress positively in BABIP. I mean, he was a 290 BABIP guy last year. I think we can see him bump it up a little bit, and that would definitely improve his batting average. I would expect it to sit around 270, 280. He's going to continue to be a liability in on-base percentage formats because he's never been a guy that has been a great walk rate guy. But I do think his contact rate will remain stable. His BABIP's going to go up, so you'll get a little bit of a bump in batting average. A couple more home runs could certainly do him some good. I don't necessarily project that, but, you know, 6-7 home runs is maybe in the cards for him with, you know, 25-30 stolen bases. If he's getting on base more, that's really good for a top 200 pick. If you go the other way with Jeanette, I just don't buy it, period, end of sentence. Like, there's no way he hits 295 again. Now against righties, he could. I've always been kind of enamored with his plate skills against right-handers, especially when he was in Milwaukee. I used him as a DFS play a lot, you know, over the last few years. But 27 home runs, a 21% home run to fly ball rate, and a dramatic spike in ISO. I just, whenever you have kind of random things like this happen any given year, I can't really bank on that going into the next year. I understand he's 28, but the Brewers would not have let him go if they expected something like this to happen. So I'm assuming that we're going to see a pretty big, drastic amount of regression coming, and the Reds have a couple other guys that they could use if they needed to. So I'm going to go with Peraza because why wouldn't I?
All right, Matt, what are your thoughts?
Pretty simple for me. I don't believe in what Gannett did last year. I believe in the power more so than the average, but I don't really – I think the power drops down to about 20 or so homers, and I think the batting average 250-ish. That's kind of where I'm at with Gannett. So in fantasy baseball landscape now, there's hundreds of players literally like Gannett you can grab, but there's not a lot of guys like Jose Peraza who can give you the 40 stolen base upside. He's not going to get there because he doesn't get on base enough, in my opinion. And he's probably one of the worst hitters in the game. But you're drafting him for one purpose, and that is speed. And he can give you that, and not a lot of guys can. And as of right now, until the Reds call up Nick Senzel, which probably shouldn't be until June or July, seeing where they're going to be in the standings, Peraza is going to play, and he's going to get some stolen bases. So you got to go Peraza, I think, because he's just so different than the other.
Paul, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, man, these are two ugly players. Let's see.
How dare you? How dare you? How dare you, Paul?
Well, wait, I'm going to pick Peraza. Just hold Thank your you. Horses here. I mean, like you said, Jeanette, or Matt said it, Jeanette, like, there's 100 players that you could take that are like Jeanette. Like, you could take Randall Grichuk, you know, in the friggin' 18th round, and well, whatever you want to say. I mean, we're all butchering names here, right? This is
yeah,
the podcast.
You just called Scooter Jeanette Scooter Gunnett, so whatever.
Yeah, I'm the only person that's going on stable here. Like, that's the only
all right.
one.
So Scooter Gunnett, he you know, you could just pick 100 guys like him. I mean, you could take guys that are in the minor. You could take Nick Senzel, and he might have a better season than Scooter Jeanette. But Jose Peraza, like you said, can give you the steals. He kind of feels like Jerod Dyson, just maybe not as fast. And he's playing, I mean, he could get you shortstop, he could get you second base. Like, he's going to be the one that sticks in the lineup if Senzel comes up and not Jeanette, just because you know, he might not be elite in the field, but he's younger and he's going to give the Reds a little bit more like just excitement, just more upside. Like, no one really cares what Jeanette still has in the tank, but Peraza is only 23 years old. So, I mean, he's going to be, you know, part of their future in somewhat, you know, in some way, even if he's terrible, like he's still going to play at least through this year and probably half of next year. And he's going to get you some stolen bases at the same time. So why not?
Yeah, I mean, at worst case scenario, he becomes a super utility guy.
Yeah,
he's still getting at bats and plate appearances. It may not, and it actually may benefit you from a fantasy sense because he could pick up eligibility everywhere. So, I mean, for me, the speed tool is the tool I want out of these guys. I don't buy Scooter Jeanette either, even though I've been a fan of Jeanette in the past. So I just can't imagine him hitting 27 home runs again, much less the 295 average. I mean, the BABIP's going to help regress that down a little bit. I know it's a nice park, but it's not like he was hitting in a crap park when he was hitting in Milwaukee anyway. So I just think he got hot for a little while and rode it out. But I don't think it's something that can sustain.
I think he hit half his home runs against the Cardinals. So,
he definitely did something to his fly balls or his swing or something. I mean, he hit 46% hard fly balls last year. That was his career average is 37%. So he clearly did something to his an uppercut swing. He pulled 30% of his fly balls too. So that explains the power, but I just don't know if that'll stick.
He hit four home runs. I forgot about that against St. Louis.
In the same Did he?
Game. Yeah, well, in one game.
Oh, yeah, in that one game.
him and Scott Schebler are the most terrifying hitters in the major leagues when they play the Cardinals. It doesn't fail.
What about Eric Thames when he faces Cincinnati?
Yeah, Eric Thames in Cincinnati, yeah.
Right, yeah, right.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about some guys with some multi-positional eligibility. That's Josh Harrison versus Yan Jarvis Solarte. Paul, what are your thoughts?
Yan Jarvis Solarte, man, it's kind of interesting that he's fantasy relevant this year, apparently. Again, like he's kind of like Scooter Jeanette to me. Like it seems like you can take a whole bunch of guys that are like him. Josh Harrison will give you a little bit more in the steals, and I think he gets traded to a good team. I think that there's going to be a playoff team that shoots for him by the deadline, and he's probably going to give you some pretty good stats on the way out. And I've always liked Josh Harrison. Before he got hurt, he was really changing the way that he swung too, and like the way that he hit fly balls, and he was hitting for more power too. So it's a pretty terrible park for that. So I don't know if I really want him to continue if he's going to be playing there. But you know, the speed is there, the average is there, multi eligibility. Yan Jarvis Solarte just seems like average in power, and it's going to be in a good park and in a good lineup most likely. But you know, I would rather have Harrison. I would rather have the steals.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
I like both these players. They both present multi-positional flexibility, with Solarte actually having shortstop eligibility as well. He, you know, got the 20-game mark last year, which is pretty awesome. 30 years old at this point, but Solarte has always been an unheralded kind of guy for fantasy because he's never been flashy, but he does have sound plate skills, not a really awesome walk rate, but a really solid contact rate. I do think the move to Rogers Center is a benefit to his power. So 20 home runs, I think, is certainly going to be in the cards for him for the first time in his career, which is awesome. With Harrison, I like him a lot. I do think we have seen an approach change. He's been a little bit more patient, especially last year. He had a career high, you know, 5% walk rate, but it did, you know, come with a little bit of a dip in strikeout rate. And that usually, with more patience, usually comes more power. He had a little bit of a BABIP down year, also had some injury issues, but the fly ball percentage went up to a career high 41%, or tied for a career high 41%. So I do think that double digit home runs is something that we can expect again. His 266 ADP is awesome. And I also think stolen base wise, we can see him creep back up to the 20-ish range. So I like both these guys for different reasons. I probably would lean towards Harrison if I'm going between the two, but if you end up getting stuck in kind of the middle infield depths in your draft because you end up drafting pitchers or whatever before, in the late rounds, one of these guys or both these guys could probably help you out and be pretty serviceable throughout the whole year for you.
Yeah, I like both these guys too. Where I really like them is in your draft and hold leagues, you know, leagues where you're not gonna be able to pick up guys in season. Just offers you so much extra flexibility if you have guys who go down with injury. So for me, I'm going to lean Harrison with the caveat that I think there's a real chance he gets traded prior to the start of the season. And if that happens, it really just depends on where he ends up. I mean, if he ends up in a super utility role somewhere, I'm obviously not going to like that because the chance he's getting back to 500 plate appearances is a little bit is slim. But, I mean, offers a nice average, power and speed. Love that combo, especially a multi-position eligible. So I'll take Harrison out of these two guys. Matt, who are you taking?
I like both. I echo a lot of what you guys said. I like Harrison's change in his batted ball profile, hitting the ball on the ground less. Yeah, he's going to get traded. So I think that's pretty much a certainty at this point. Saw the home runs go from 13 to 4 to 4 to 16 in only 128 games last year. I'm betting on, you know, a 20 home run season, if you can stay healthy, a 20 home run season and potentially 15 stolen bases. I'll take that over the probably 20 home run season from Solarte. So I'm going to go Harrison, but I like both.
All right.
Wait, hold on. Before we move on, I have a question for Matt and me, apparently, since I drafted Chris Taylor, too. But what's the difference between Josh Harrison and Chris Taylor?
For me, better lineup. And Taylor can play outfield. A lot of leagues require 5 outfielders. It gives him a little added boost. And I like Taylor's line drive rate, harder to contact, all that stuff. They're a little bit better than what Harrison. And Harrison has been inconsistent. I know it's weird saying this because Taylor's kind of just arrived last season, and we don't even know if it's real. But Harrison's gone kind of back and forth as far as the batted ball profile a little bit. So I'm going to lean Taylor. And Taylor's 3 years younger, kind of entering the 27-year-old season this year. It's, if you believe in that sort of thing, I go Taylor. But I mean, you're making a strong point in saying that they're not all that different. So.
Yeah, I just think with the ADP, like now that I mean, like I said, I took Chris Taylor too, so there's not really much I can say. But so
I'm aggressive on Taylor. I think he can be 2020 again. I don't think Harrison can do that. But
Taylor also walks a little bit more.
Yeah.
So
and he's, I mean, I feel like you said, if Josh Harrison gets traded, then you know I might question his playing time. But with Chris Taylor, the defense is so elite. I just feel like they're going to have him in the lineup every day. Like, you know, even with their depth and outfield, I think everyone else is going to get rest except for Chris Taylor because he can play everywhere and play everywhere well.
Right. Yeah, I agree with all that. And one thing I do want to add with Josh Harrison is, yeah, he saw his OBP spike up to 339, but he was hit by pitch 23 times last year.
Yeah.
So that's hell of an OBP spike. I don't anticipate that happening again because you look at his career averages in that category. He's around 7, 3, 4, 7, and 5, and then 23. It's not even I can figure out where the outlier is there. So I think if you're in OBP formats, Harrison, I would not expect him to be anywhere close to a 330 OBP again.
All right. Let's finish out with Joe Panik versus Colton Wong. And we talk about guys that Matt's going to overrate because they're Cardinals. We always throw it to Matt first. Go ahead, Matt.
I don't think there's any overrating either one of these guys. I think they're both end-of-roster fillers. But if I'm drafting toward the end of my draft like that, I'm going to go with the upside. And Colton Wong had nice offensive gains last year approach-wise. So I'm going to go Wong. I still think there's a little bit more power and probably a little more speed both in there that he's shown. I'm not anticipating either one of them really popping out this year, but I do think they're a better bet than what Joe Panik can do for you. And plus, Joe Panik has a severe back injury from everything we've been told. That's just kind of a ticking time bomb kind of thing. So I'm going to go Wong. I think the Cardinals lineup's a little bit better than the Giants also, but again, you're probably dealing with a guy with Panik who's probably Panik might have a shot at hitting second. Mm-hmm. I doubt it though, but Wong can hit.
But he might.
Yeah, and Wong is going to hit eighth. That's not really a debate. He is going to hit eighth. But I'm going to gamble on the gains Wong made last year. I don't think a lot of people realize that Colton Wong had a 376 OBP last year. So that's playable in any format. So I'm going to go Wong, but I'm not very excited about either one.
Paul, who do you prefer?
Yeah, I would agree with that last statement in its entirety. I'm not really excited about either of these guys, but yeah, I'd probably go Wong too. I agree with the upside. I hope he plays this year just because that profile is really exciting to me. I mean, he had 411 plate appearances last year, 4 home runs, 8 stolen bases, and the walks were great. I mean, the OBP was great. You know, he was a good player last year. Was he really fantasy relevant? Probably not, but I think it's more there for Colton Wong than Joe Panik. I don't see the power ever going up for Joe Panik just because he plays in a terrible park for it. And he's just not a power hitter. He doesn't steal bases like Colton Wong. And I mean, the average can be really similar with these guys. So I would definitely take Colton Wong over Panik.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
Hot take alert. Colton Wong is going to steal 25 bases this year. That's
what?
My hot take.
Hey, you know what? He's 15 for 17 in the last 2 years. He just doesn't get to run because I don't need to go on the rant. I've done it before.
Well, my argument is the Cardinals don't have a lot of speedsters on their roster, and I think Wong is going to be the guy that they use to kind of be a table setter at the end of the lineup. So I like Wong for a lot of reasons. First off, his plate skills have remained sound, especially last year, like 10% walk rate, 83% contact rate. He's had an 80%+ contact rate each of his 5 years in the MLB. He's still only 27 years old. He's going outside the top 350 picks. He costs literally nothing, and no, he's not going to hit for any power, but in a day and age where we need some speed, like, yeah, sign me up. I'll take some Colton Wong. Joe Panik, I like that he had a line drive rate uptick last year. That will probably continue to make his batting average be more than serviceable for fantasy, but that's about all he offers. It's some batting average, a couple home runs. The plate skills are also great for him. Not quite as good of a walk rate as Wong, but still very, very good, and also a very good contact rate as well. But if I'm going with one of them, I'm going with Wong because I do think that he has the upside to steal 25 to 30 bases this year, and I like to make hot takes like that. So hot take central, 25 stolen bases, Wong, book it.
Wong had a 20 stolen base season with a 292 OBP a couple years ago. So yeah. Just imagine what he gains now. Right. And
that was the year we all thought the next year that he had potential to go 2020. It just never happened.
I still think he has the skill set for it, but I don't think they're ever going to have it.
The power is out. The power will never be – I would be shocked if he had more than 12 home runs any year in his career.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I've seen multiple reports on him. I mean, I'm sure you've read them too, Matt, but he is making it a point to steal more bases this year. He's getting in shape, So him and Tommy Pham, I know, are on this whole kick about stealing bases and stuff, and that's not the whole reason that I think this will happen. I just, every year we have guys in fantasy that either have done it before or haven't done it yet that aren't even ranked or just way outside of the realm of possibility of drafting, and they come out of nowhere and they do it, and a lot of times people don't even realize it until halfway through the season. And I think Wong could probably be one of those guys.
Yeah, totally off subject, but you mentioned Tommy Pham, and I've totally come around on him. I'm actually completely on board now. But different subject for a different podcast. For me, this is all about roster construction. If you're looking for upside, obviously you're going to go with Colton Wong. If you're looking for average, and that's something you might be looking for late in the draft, Joe Panik is going to play a lot. He's going to hit at the top of the lineup, so he's going to get a ton of plate appearances. And he's going to hit for a pretty decent average. And so for me, if you're looking for a stabilizing force to maybe offset some bad batting average guys early on, Joe Panik is the guy. But other than that, it's definitely Wong for me. So that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Hey, man, it was awesome. I appreciate you guys inviting me on. And yeah, very fun. Very fun.
Well, we'll definitely have you back on again. Paul, why don't you remind people where you can be reached on social media and then plug all your work?
All right, so social media, it's pretty much just Twitter, at Paul the Martin. The is my middle name. I have the Real Fake Baseball podcast on iTunes and pretty much anywhere. It's on LennyMelnickFantasySports.com as well. And you can get the daily shows that I do for that website for Lenny on the Real Fake Baseball podcast as well. So everything that I do will go through that feed.
Awesome. Matt, what are you working on? Where can you be reached?
Can be reached MD Top FWFB. Look for all my stuff in the draft guide that should be coming out shortly. And it's me that's holding up the draft guide, so send your hate mail my way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Matt's going to have that done before the weekend, though, so that way we can try to get it out, hopefully, on Monday. So look for the draft guide to drop. We'll be tweeting it out a bunch. We'll be sharing it on all sorts of different places. Matt's putting a lot of work into those prospect pieces, but we've got a lot of other writers at Friends Fantasy Benefits that have put a lot of hard work into it as well. So, Mike, where can you reach? What are you working on?
Yeah, I mean, first off, how do we do a second base podcast with you and I where we don't talk about Jose Altuve? I really am kind of shocked by that.
I figured there was nothing really to talk about. He's awesome.
I mean, he's good.
He's like short and awesome, which is like even awesomer.
Don't get cute. That's number one. Don't get cute.
Anyways, yeah, on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Draft guide is coming out. I'm going to continue to write for Baseball HQ this year on the daily matchups front. I should be doing something for Fangraphs. I don't know what yet, but that'll be coming this year as well. And, you know, anything else, just look at look for on Twitter and on friendswithfantasybenefits.com.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can hear me, obviously, on Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcasts and read some of my written work on FWFB. You can also hear me on Sleeper and the Bust, the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You can read all my written work at Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarm, Fantrax. I'm sure I'm forgetting something. Oh, yeah, of course, the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational podcast you can hear me on.
Just if you type in Fantasy Baseball search, on Twitter, yeah, you'll find on Justin Google somewhere.
Yeah,
on Google, no, yeah. On Facebook, you know, Reddit, wherever.
No, not Reddit.
Not Reddit.
No Reddit.
You
no.
are not going to see me on Reddit, Snapchat.
Snapchat, Reddit, Instagram.
Yeah.
Justin is only on platforms that start with the letter F.
Yes, exactly. No Bumble or whatever that is. I don't know.
What?
No Bumble?
Yeah, I don't know what Bumble is, but I'm not on it. So.
What the hell is Bumble?
It's like the thing where the girls hit you up. It's like the Tinder, but girls text you.
Well, I should obviously be on that.
Obviously, Justin's on Bumble. We don't know what it is.
if that's what that is, then my phone would never stop going off.
Yeah.
God. Matt, your jokes are getting so much worse. They're so much worse.
I never said I was joking. Normally you can tell when I'm joking. That was serious.
Oh, it's God. Really hard to tell because neither are funny. But anyways, that's going to do us for this episode. For Paul, Matt, Mike, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.
Matt, you're on mute.
No, he's not. Matt was would like so, to say that he wants Javier
Baez. Was he really
Baez.
Upset about Odor? Was he upset about the Odor talk? I mean, I'm sorry, Matt. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
By the way, Javier Baez had more soft contact than Rougned Odor last year, just saying.
Oh, did he? Go figure.
Yes.
You know who led in barrels among second basemen? Jonathan Scope. So, ooh. Odor was fourth. Dozier was second. Ian Kinsler third. Look at
Matt,
you.
Matt, are you there? This is going to be fun to edit.
I wonder if he's still talking and he just doesn't realize.
I hope so.
Message him maybe? Hey, Matt. We can't hear you.
Well, I mean, he was really energetic, so maybe he just fell asleep.
Yeah.
I mean, DJ LeMahieu is pretty boring.
Yeah. Every second that passes, Justin's getting more and more pissed.
I love DJ LeMahieu too. Can you not put that in the show? But I love him.
And I just hung up on Matt.
See you, Matt.
Sorry, dude. Nah. We're our timestamp, Justin.
He's still in arbitration. How?
Matt, you there?
DJ LeMahieu has had 3,218 plate appearances, and he's still in arbitration.
My God.
How is that possible?
I have no idea.
He's played 800.
Matt, is your mic plugged in?
Maybe
you can't hear us.
Matt.
827 games.
My God.
I don't know how any of this works. I don't know how baseball works, to be honest.
He got 6 years of control. So yeah, this is true. His last year of arbitration.
It's just crazy. Like, I don't know. That just seems like a crazy number to me.
He's a future Miami Marlin or something.
He said, yeah, Matt, what? Is he now chatting his pod? Oh, I didn't know this is how chat works on Skype now. Mm-hmm. This is all interesting.
Yep, this is it.
Crazy. All right, well, do you think I have time to, like, go get another beer or something?
Yeah, go get a beer.
All right, I'll be right back. Wait, so what happens if we don't have Matt for the rest of the show? Is that how it works?
We hold a short funeral.
Matt, fix your shit and call us back.
I would love that.
We're just gonna push on.
Yeah.